I believe God has made me the way that he's made me. It's taken me 35 years to come to terms with that.
Vicky, God has the power to help you to overcome your homosexual inclinations. You have adopted the thinking of the world.
Like science, you mean?
Well, you gotta move back.
The more visible bank robber is 27-year-old John Wojtowicz, an out-of-work New York City resident and an admitted homosexual.
The dog's real issue was the line, Attica, Attica, because he never said it, and it's the most famous line from Dog Day Afternoon.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Dozens are busted in an anti-gay crackdown in Lebanon. Newly out Christian singer Beeching rocks the Bible in a lively debate. And the dog gets his day in a new documentary. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Michael LeBeau.
And I'm Sarah Sweeney.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBT communities around the world for the week ending August 16, 2014. A police crackdown targeting gay men has seemingly begun in Lebanon. There were reports this week of police raids on at least two male bathhouses in Beirut. 27 men were arrested at one facility on August 9th and charged with gay sex and indecency. According to the Huffington Post, six were released, while the other 21 men remain behind bars. 16 of them have asked for legal help from HALEM, Lebanon's LGBT advocacy organization. Because substantial bail amounts have been set, the group is trying to raise the funds to help the men get out of jail. Police officials claim to have received confessions from all 21 detainees. A second raid on August 14th reportedly netted just one male employee at another bathhouse before it had opened. There were unconfirmed reports of yet another raid, also on August 14th, on a private home in the northern city of Tripoli that was hosting a meeting of gay men. According to those reports, 17 people were arrested there. Lebanese human rights activist Dr. Hassan Abdesamad attributed the newsmaking crackdown to the perceived weakness of Lebanon's security forces and their failure to act against violent militias. He said it could be a policy of distraction, where they can be seen to be doing something by targeting a vulnerable and even voiceless population, which is unpopular with the general public.
Uganda remains in the news this week. The East African nation's constitutional court overturned the draconian anti-homosexuality law on a legal technicality on August 1st. Among other provisions, it would have punished private consensual adult gay sex with up to life in prison, outlawed the advocacy of LGBT rights, and required citizens to report suspected homosexuals to the police. Uganda's Attorney General has already appealed the ruling to the nation's Supreme Court. Members of Parliament immediately called for the reinstatement of the law. Caught between lost Western financial aid if he signs such a bill again, and a public outcry by his countrymen if he doesn't, the law is highly popular in Uganda, President Yoweri Museveni continues to walk a political tightrope. He urged MPs this week not to rush toward quick passage of another anti-gay law, specifically citing international relations. One MP then accused Museveni of dragging his feet on the issue. Another insisted that a new version of the measure, now being drafted, would not target men in private consensual adult gay relationships and would focus only on those who promote homosexuality to children.
The news for sexual minorities in neighboring Kenya may be a bit better. Eric Gitari of the country's National Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission reported on his Facebook page this week that a horrific bill calling for gay people to be stoned to death has apparently been rejected by Parliament's Legal Affairs Committee as unconstitutional and in conflict with international interests. The sponsors of the Uganda-style bill to protect the family, the Republican Liberty Party, claim that there's a need to protect children and youth who are vulnerable to sexual abuse and deviation as a result of cultural changes. Kenya's colonial-era penal code already punishes homosexual acts with between 5 and 14 years in prison. Gitari also announced on Facebook and Twitter this week that his group plans to file a lawsuit challenging that law.
There have been unusual setbacks for LGBT rights in the United States. After more than 30 consecutive rulings by state and federal courts in favor of marriage equality since last year's landmark Supreme Court Windsor ruling, Roane County Circuit Judge Russell E. Simmons Jr. ruled on August 5th that Tennessee's ban on performing or recognizing the civil marriages of same-gender couples does not violate the state constitution and denied the divorce request of two Tennessee men who married in Iowa 4 years ago. Like other judges who've arrived at decisions favoring marriage equality, Simmons recognized marriage as a fundamental right. But he decided that neither the Tennessee Supreme Court nor the United States Supreme Court has ever decided that this fundamental right under a state's law extends beyond the traditional definition of marriage as a union between one man and one woman. Simmons also accepted the claim by Tennessee officials that the state has a rational basis to deny civil marriage to same-gender couples to encourage responsible procreation. That argument had until now been rejected by every other court in the U.S. when it was made in a marriage equality case.
And voters in the city of Chattanooga, Tennessee, have also reminded LGBT activists that the battle for equality is far from over. An ordinance passed by the city council last year to offer health care benefits to the same-gender partners of coupled gay and lesbian city workers was repealed on August 5th. And it wasn't even close. 8,184 voted to keep the ordinance, but 13,685 voted to repeal it. A local Tea Party group and a conservative political action committee had collected signatures to overturn the ordinance, claiming that the city couldn't afford the extra costs.
In Louisiana, a metro council in the city of Baton Rouge rejected a proposed law this week that would have banned discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity. The East Baton Rouge Parish Metro Council defeated the Fairness Ordinance in an 8-4 vote. One council member told the local Advocate newspaper that bias against LGBT people doesn't rise to the level of discrimination experienced by other minority groups. Another said that other equally oppressed groups are not protected, including women, people living in poverty, people who have been convicted of felonies, or who are living with HIV/AIDS, and overweight people.
And in Texas, anti-equality activists are suing the city of Houston after their petition to overturn a bias-banning ordinance fell short of the required number of qualifying signatures. Houston's out lesbian mayor, Anise Parker, spearheaded passage of the ordinance and, along with the city, is a named defendant. A local radio news station reported late this week that Judge Robert Schaefer has scheduled a hearing on the case for January 19th. He also ordered that the statute not be enforced until after that trial. Nevertheless, the delay means that the ordinance cannot come before voters in November as its opponents had hoped.
Meanwhile, yet another right-wing homophobe is warning of apocalyptic consequences if marriage equality continues to spread throughout the U.S. Seventh-day Adventist pastor Matt Stavers is the founder of the Far-Right Liberty Council, a nonprofit law firm that claims to defend Christian religious liberty, the sanctity of human life, and the traditional family. Like several of his counterparts, Stavers seems fascinated by the alleged connection between homosexuality and Nazism. He told Radio America host Greg Corumbos this week that lawmakers who fail to fight marriage equality are comparable to those who remained silent during the Holocaust.
This is not an issue in which you can remain silent any more than you can remain silent during Nazi Germany. That was a moral issue. It was not defined by geography. There is a moral imperative there of the dignity of the human being. You can't remain silent there and expect no consequences. Nor can you remain silent or advocate to the contrary with regards to the undermining of marriage as the union of a man and woman. If politicians want to advocate that, or they want to remain silent in the face of that, if they want to remain silent in the face of well-known religious hostility that will result, then there will be consequences to their political future.
That was right-wing anti-LGBT zealot Matt Stavers. On the other hand...
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the 2014 Gay Games. And to the thousands of athletes, coaches, family, and spectators from around the world, welcome to Ohio and the United States of America.
U.S. President Barack Obama kicked off the quadrennial Gay Games on August 9th with a video greeting. Thousands of athletes from more than 45 countries and from across the United States streamed into Cleveland's major sports stadium, known as the Q, for the colorful, as always, opening ceremonies. Lance Bass and the Pointer Sisters performed. Mr. Obama also acknowledged the international competitors who had made their way to the Cleveland-Akron area.
I know some of you have come from places where it requires courage, even defiance, to come out, sometimes at great personal risk. You should know that the United States stands with you and for your human rights, just as our athletes stand with you on the field at these games.
Spectators and participants alike during the opening ceremonies pointedly greeted the delegation from the Russian Federation with a standing ovation.
And finally, at least one world record has already fallen at the Gay Games. Winning the 100-meter dash in a time of just under 60 seconds may not sound like a major accomplishment, unless you're 99-year-old Ida Keeling. Keeling became the first person in the 95 to 99-year-old age category to run the 100 meters in an internationally certified race. She took up the sport with the encouragement of her daughter, Shelley, who also competed at the games and greeted the great-great-grandmother at the finish line. Shelley said that her mother sees the Gay Games just as running with other runners. 99-year-old Ida Keeling still lives independently in a studio apartment in New York, works out twice a week in her building's gym, and does yoga. She credits her continued vitality and health to regular exercise, healthy eating, and the skills she learned having to survive in Harlem during the Great Depression of the 1930s. She told the Akron Beacon Journal that she was running from old age and arthritis.
That's News Wrap for the week ending August 16th, 2014. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm Sarah Sweeney.
And I'm Michael LeBeau.
You can bank on a new documentary about the dog and his afternoon later in the program.
Please greet Vicky Beeching.
Great is the glory of the Lord, and I will sing with all my heart unto your love.
Few fans of Vicky Beeching's Christian rock music may have shouted hallelujah when she said last week that she's a lesbian. But her first broadcast interview after the announcement drew resounding amens from LGBT people and their allies. Britain's Channel 4 News set Beeching up to debate anti-gay evangelist Scott Lively, the man currently being sued in U.S. federal court for violating the civil rights of LGBT Ugandans because of his involvement in the development of that country's anti-homosexuality law, though Lively continues to deny his complicity. When he tried to sell Beeching the all-too-familiar party line, Lively found himself facing a biblical scholar who could take him on toe-to-toe.
My sister was a lesbian, and in fact, I was the person that she came out to as a teenager, and I was the person that she turned to later when lesbianism had almost destroyed her, and she became a Christian and overcame lesbianism. And so I have a lot of sympathy for people who struggle with the challenge that Vicky is facing. And I'm very sorry to hear that she has given in to the lie that that she is a homosexual.
That is very much what I've been raised to believe. And I think psychologically that's actually very damaging for people because it makes you feel like you're fighting against yourself. And I think many conservative Christians, maybe Scott too, would agree that it's actually a kind of demonic thing. So you begin to look within yourself thinking, actually, these feelings are not only bad, but I'm being controlled by the devil. I mean, that's what I was told in Nashville. So I think actually it's about coming to terms with who you are and realizing we need to accept our sexual orientation as a God-given gift, rather than making it sound like it's a battle between who you're made to be and who you are.
Reverend Lively, is Vicky being controlled by the devil?
All of us struggle with various different types of temptations. It's part of human life. Christians face these same temptations. There's no difference between the challenges that we have or anyone else in the world has. But we are called to rise above the temptations and to follow the guidance of God. He gave very, very clear, explicit instructions about sexuality. He established the one flesh paradigm in Genesis 1:27 and 2:24, that therefore shall a man leave his family and cleave unto his wife, and they shall become one flesh. And all sexual activity outside of that covenant that he's established for us to have between one man and one woman is illicit and wrong. And just because you have temptations, strong temptations, to go outside of that bond, that doesn't legitimize them. I'm a married man. I've been married for 33 years. But being a man, I'm attracted to women other than my wife. But I've never given into those temptations.
It's a very different situation, though.
And all I'm asking
Vicky, let me just ask you one question.
Anyone else struggling with homosexuality to do it?
If you're a straight person, and people use this argument on me a lot, when I've argued this before just as a theologian, if you're a straight person and you say, actually, it's wrong for me as a Christian to have sex outside of marriage, so I'm going to commit to one person of the same sex, that actually gives you the hope of having a life partner, of finding one person and committing to them. But if you're saying that a Christian gay person actually can't have sex outside of that heterosexual paradigm at all,
well,
it means there's
premise,
no hope
Vicky.
For them to have a partner.
It's a false premise. There's no such thing as a gay person.
So you
it's
do
a,
not think that people are born gay?
It's an identity you adopt.
So how come I can't change
Absolutely
the way I
not.
Feel?
Absolutely not.
I believe
Absolutely
God
not.
Has made me the way that he's made me. It's taken me 35 years to come to terms with that, and I believe it's actually part of my God-wired identity.
Vicky, God has the power to help you to overcome your homosexual inclinations. First
that kind
Corinthians
of teaching has been
chapter
so
6,
damaging
9 through
to
11.
Me, and it damages so many people. I think it's one of those things that can really psychologically scar
you. You keep referring to psychology rather than to spirituality. I think that's your problem. You have adopted the thinking of the world, including the idea
like science,
that,
you mean?
That being criticized damages
you. So science
you.
Is not God-ordained. Well, God didn't give us a brain and intellect.
True science and biblical theology are perfectly consistent.
Okay. So psychology for you does not reflect God's intellect in us as humans. Because I would say that actually psychology is extremely...
What I'm saying
is it part of what it means to be human is to have a brain and to be intelligent, and God gave us that ability. So I think that the studies into sexuality
don't
are very much
important.
Don't
you care what God thinks, Vicky?
I do, and that is actually why I'm taking this step
Vicky,
today,
don't you
so
care
that young
what God
people
thinks?
Don't have to listen to the kind of teaching that you peddle. I'm doing a PhD in theology. There are many ways you
no,
can read
are,
the Bible. I love the Bible with all my heart. It's my favorite book.
I have a PhD myself, and
Good.
I also have
and
a doctor of law.
And we can agree to disagree on the fact that those texts can be read in different ways.
Contemporary Christian music singer-songwriter Vicky Beeching apparently didn't make much of an impression on professional homophobe Scott Lively on that British Channel 4 news program. She did, however, leave a message for LGBT and questioning youth.
If one of those teenagers could just see more people standing up and saying, actually, it's okay. You know, the Bible, which I love and I've studied in depth, you know, it doesn't actually say what we think it says about human sexuality. We've got a lot of it wrong. And I just hope there can be a message of hope to those young people to be who they are, to know that that's okay and that God loves them exactly the way they are.
Hi, this is Janice Ian, and you're listening to This Way Out. Support your local public radio station. You ain't gonna get this nowhere else.
The 1975 movie Dog Day Afternoon, starring Al Pacino, is a cinema classic. Two documentarians decided to investigate the gay man at the center of those real-life events. They shared some of what they learned with our Steve Pride.
All in all, August 22nd, 1972 was a summer day just like any other summer day. Hot, humid, close, with everyone trying to get a bit of relief from the oppressive heat and humidity. And then it happened. At 2:58 p.m. that afternoon, two men entered a bank in Brooklyn and began what turned out to be the most sensational, most bizarre, most unbelievable bank robbery in the history of crime.
I'm Frank Rodron, one of the two directors of the documentary The Dog.
And I'm Allison Berg, the other director of The Dog.
The Dog is about a man called John Wadowitz who attempted to rob a bank in Brooklyn in 1972 to pay for his lover's sex change operation. And that story, if it sounds familiar, it's because it became Sidney Lumet's Dog Day Afternoon with Al Pacino.
You know something, people? You're going to be remembered the rest of your lives for the day you got held up and kidnapped. We made history here.
Al Pacino. Dog Day Afternoon. A true story.
And our film, The Dog, is the story of the real-life bank robber.
All right, fellas, you got to move back.
The more visible bank robber is 27-year-old John Wojtowicz, an out-of-work New York City resident and an admitted homosexual who left his wife and two children 3 years ago.
You know, a lot of people have asked us if the makers of Dog Day Afternoon had ever met John Wojtowicz, and they hadn't. Frank Pearson had tried to visit him in prison a number of times and was turned away. So we watched them meet for the first time, and the dog's real issue was the line, Attica, Attica, because he never said it, and it's the most famous line from Dog Day Afternoon. But because they were able to get interviews with the other people in John's life and they had the actual news footage of the bank robbery, it was incredible how close to John's real-life character Frank Pearson got.
Why this film? Why did you become involved with this story?
We both love Dog Day Afternoon. We were watching it one day and just found ourselves thinking at the end, like, wow, I really wonder what happened to that guy. And we thought also that at the time he was about to come out of prison, we just sort of miscalculated based on the card that's at the end of the film. So we got very excited about that and thought it was going to be a film where we would meet him in prison maybe and film him getting back into real life. To make a long story short, we found out he'd been out for a long time, but we did look him up. And when we met him in person, which was a few weeks later, he was instantly sort of unrestrained and very manic and lovable but a little bit creepy and all those things. And we spent a whole day with him. I think at that moment we knew, okay, like, forget Dog Day Afternoon. This man is very interesting as a subject and has many layers to his story and his personality. To us, that just pulled us in. I mean, he was charismatic, I would say.
Yeah, and it was also covering a place and a time and a certain character that we were both really interested in. We wanted to revisit the 70s and revisit this bank robbery. And there's sort of a disappearing New York, in a sense, a certain type of character, a kind of messy, less sanitized version of somebody. And that was the dog. And we met him. He likes to push people's buttons, and he's hilarious. And I mean, I think for some people, they wouldn't want to spend day and night with this guy. But for some reason, Frank and I just decided we did.
What was your biggest surprise about John?
His appetite, in every sense of the word. His appetite for sex, for food, for his energy. Just, you can't believe, like, what you see on camera, that's how he really was.
I think also perhaps his openness is something that was really striking. Meaning, you know, when he spoke, he said what was on his mind at all times, in any situation. He kind of lived as if his actions had no consequences. And it's not necessarily a good thing, but I think his openness made a lot of his questionable behavior okay. Because in what he did, you would always find something that made you go like, yeah, he's right, I agree with that. But in life, he also made some very poor choices, like robbing a bank. But his reasons were often, you know, things you can really argue with in a way, in a theoretical way.
Right. The fact that he was so unfiltered, that's a word that comes up a lot about the dog. And I think that a lot of people look at the way he lived his life and they think, okay, I wouldn't have made the same choices. But his outspokenness, I think people appreciate because there's so few people that live their life that way.
In Dog Day Afternoon, Patina's character is presented as more bisexual than gay. What about John?
You have to remember when Dog Day Afternoon was made, and you have to remember it was Al Pacino who had just played, he was just in The Godfather. I mean, even today, it's almost hard to imagine like an A-list Hollywood actor who would take on a part like that. I don't know what choices were made when they were shooting or writing, but it was played as a straight man who's sort of like, oh, you know, well, he's got a wife and kids. He just, you know, he likes the boys on the side or something. So it made it okay for a wider heterosexual audience as a story. I think in real life, clearly, I mean, John was completely gay. He wasn't even bi. I mean, there's a lot of talk about his ex-wife, Carmen, that he kept writing to for years and years and all that. But my experience of it was John was clearly gay, you know.
In your film, the biggest surprise for me was that prior to the robbery, John was involved in GAA, Gay Activist Alliance, including demonstrations for same-sex marriage and even his own extravagant same-sex wedding with Ernie or Liz.
I think that really surprised us in the making of our film because we didn't know that we had the footage we had. There's somebody in our film, Randy Wicker, who's a gay rights activist and journalist, and he started with Mattachine. I mean, he's one of the first. And he had filmed John and Liz's wedding, and he'd filmed the Marriage Bureau protest, and he gave Frank the footage. And when we finally got it transferred, we didn't know John was in the footage, and Randy didn't remember it either. So even though we knew he was part of this movement, he became part of it more for sexual reasons than political reasons, and then he got more and more involved. But we didn't know to what extent we would have the material to have in our film. So that was like a great surprise for us, because I think a lot of people appreciate that part of the film.
John would boast a lot about a lot of things. He liked to be the center of the story. But when you look at that footage, when you see what he did, you're like, I mean, indeed, he was way ahead of his time. I think for John, it came from a place also of his background being this Italian-American kid from Brooklyn who was raised Catholic. And when he met Liz, you know, he fell in love real quick, and immediately he wanted this wedding ceremony. I think he was just that guy. Like, a lot of people were debating it. John was more of a hands-on, you know, I got to do this guy.
And John didn't want her to have the sex reassignment surgery, but it's what Liz really wanted. And he's like, I'm going to love you no matter what gender you are, who you are, what you look like. I mean, he was in love with Liz. And also, I think he's one of those guys that the second he meets somebody and falls in love with them, that's it. And that's what happened with Liz. And if Liz wanted to make a major change in her life, he was still going to be in love with her.
What happened after the bank robbery?
John was imprisoned. And while he was in prison, he met his third wife, George. Also, while he was in prison is when Dog Day Afternoon, he signed the contract. He actually could care less about a movie being made about what happened. But he signed the contract because he was going to be given some money, and he was able to give that money to Liz for the sex change operation. And so, in a strange sense, he did succeed.
The bank holdup is underway at this time in the Chase Manhattan Bank branch at Avenue P and East 3rd Street in Brooklyn.
What's going on now?
We're waiting to negotiate the release of the people so we can get out of here.
What are your terms for release?
Well, I want them to deliver my wife here from Kings County Hospital. His name is Ernest Aaron. It's a guy. I'm gay.
This has been a conversation with Alison Berg and Frank Karajan, directors of The Dog. John Wadowitz was released from prison in 1978 after serving 6 years of a 20-year sentence, and he died of cancer in 2006 at the age of 60. This is Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
I don't want to be right if it means being without you. I don't want to be right if it means sleeping at night. I don't want to be right.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. This week, Michael LeBeau, Sarah Sweeney, and Steve Pride contributed program material. Vicky Beeching and Luther Ingram performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Yavanna Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentham, and our generous listeners for making this program possible. There's lots more to inform and entertain you at thiswayout.org, including on-demand listening on Stitcher, NewsWrap transcripts, and links to our blog, Facebook, and Google Plus pages. Follow TWO Radio on Twitter, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening online at thiswayout.org and on 4ZZZ Brisbane, Queensland, WDIY Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, KUGS Bellingham, Washington, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.